Welcome to another episode of The Finer Life Show. I'm your host, Greg Hush Williams. On today's show, we're going to be talking to former VA Secretary David Shulkin. Now, Secretary Shulkin is going to drop some jewels on organizational leadership and talk about men's health. Take a listen.
Well, I think that no matter what I've done, I've led a lot of organizations in my career where I've been the CEO. But I've always maintained that I think first as a doctor. And a doctor primarily does two things. One is you take an oath not to do harm. So you want to make sure that everything that you're doing is in the interest of your patients. And in this case, the patient was the Department of Veteran Affairs that when I entered was in a crisis. And I wanted to make sure not only did I not make it worse, but that I made it better. And secondly, government's primary role is to ensure the safety of its citizens. That's why the Department of Defense and our veterans and our active military are so important, because it's a primary function of government. We've just come through a pandemic where the primary function of government was to ensure the health of the American people. And so I wanted to make sure that I was serving and improving the health and well-being of the 21 million American veterans. And that's very consistent with the vow that I took when I became a physician, the Hippocratic Oath.
So if you could, I'm all about tips. I love learning from people. And I think veterans love learning from people as well, especially, you know, organizational leaders. So let's touch upon a topic of organizational leadership. Five tips for executive leadership that might help somebody or it might help individuals grow.
Absolutely.
As leaders,
and I love your attitude of that you love to learn, because that to me is one of the most important things of anybody in their career is there's always a lot to learn. And I learned so much from our veterans and their families about what it means to be in public service. But I would say the five things are, first of all, and this comes right from your own experience in the military, you have to lead through principles. You have to be principle-based. And that's where you stand up for what you believe in, you tell people for what you believe in, and you act the way that you adhere to those standards. So that's number one. Number two is that leaders can never communicate enough. As much as you think that you're doing, you probably, and you almost certainly need to do more. Number three is leaders should listen more and talk less. Listening to people and really trying to hear what they're saying, not just staying silent, but making sure that people understand that you care about their perspective and that you will learn from their perspective is a third trait. Number four, I think, is to be transparent. And that means that a leader is one of the few people in the organization that can hold a mirror up to the organization and tell it like it is. Many other people in the organization fear that if they are that candid, that there'll be retribution or that it will hurt their career. But the leader has the responsibility for essentially telling the story like it is. And in the Department of Veteran Affairs, when I entered office in 2015, there were some real problems with wait times. And I had to tell the organization that we were not succeeding at the mission. We were letting our veterans down. And it was that type of candor that I think allowed people to understand that we had to do some serious changes to turn that around. And the last and fifth one I would say is that leaders have the opportunity to set a vision, to create a reason why an organization wants to improve, why it continues to exist. It needs to inspire, leaders need to inspire those that work in the organization by creating a vision that people want to see be successful. And so I think if you do all five of those things, that's really the key to leading successful organizations.
Now, you touched upon something that I wanted to get into later. I might as well bring it up now. You actually revolutionized the wait time. A lot of veterans, the military is all about hurry up and wait. And it feels like, you know, especially when it comes to healthcare, who really wants to wait in the health room? You really have an emergency and you want to get to your day to day. And sometimes it can be the difference between life and death. How did you come up with that idea and how did you implement it?
Well, look, I was given a gift when I came into the Department of Veteran Affairs. President Obama was secretary. There was a wait time crisis that led to the resignation of the secretary at the time, the undersecretary. Congress was extremely concerned about this wait time. I entered with what you would call a burning platform to fix that for our veterans. And when I was confirmed by the Senate, 100-0, I made a promise that when I got in, I was going to fix this, and I was not going to back down from that commitment. So the first thing I did was I did take a lesson from the military, but it wasn't just wait. It frankly was to use the terminology that your listeners know very well called a stand down. That means that you stop what you're doing and you focus all your attention on a problem until you get it solved. And as soon as I got in as into the VA, I called for a stand down that we were going to fix the wait times. And I made sure that anybody on a wait list at that time was seen immediately. And then from there, I made a commitment that we were not going to ever build back up a wait list, that we were going to have what was called same day appointments. If you had a clinically urgent problem, whether it was a physical problem or a mental health problem, and it was urgent, we were going to see you that same day. I also publicly posted our wait times, which had never been done before in healthcare, but I felt that if we were going to be accountable for our results and we're going to be transparent with our progress and where we had problems, we had to let veterans know what the wait times were. So we publicly posted all of our wait times. And that combination of sort of the focus, the strategies that we use to expand our ability to see veterans and this type of transparency led to us being able to resolve what we now know in the past as the wait time crisis.
Right. So let me ask you this question. A lot of veterans want to know, what can they do to improve the healthcare system? What could they, as the receivers, do to improve something or to improve a system that is designed to treat them? And if you could start at the lowest level from communities to veteran communities to maybe those who are looking to get into the health profession, I'd greatly appreciate it. You know, let's start from the top, from the bottom down up.
I think what we learned about caring for veterans across the country is that as good as the VA is or can be, it can't do it alone. So it has to do it with partnerships in the community. It has to work with local organizations, veteran organizations, local healthcare providers, nonprofit groups, in order to make sure that there aren't holes or gaps in the system. And frankly, the rest of the American public learned this lesson during the pandemic when hospitals and health systems couldn't do it alone. They needed to reach out to the military to help in New York City and reach out to organizations and pharmaceutical companies and government and private sector healthcare needed to work together. The second thing I think is that in order to get the best healthcare, it needs to be a real partnership between the veteran and their healthcare providers. This is not the good old days where you just wait until your doctor tells you what to do. This is about learning how to take care of yourself, learning how to ask the right questions, learn how to advocate when you need to for yourself, and support your fellow veterans in peer counseling and peer support. The problem that we have with veteran suicides, I convince the solution needs to be to lean on that peer support and to have veterans support one another because they understand what they're going through better than people who have never had the experience of serving. And so, you know, it's really this type of teamwork that exists between healthcare providers, veterans, and the patients themselves and their families, caregivers and family members. We know when somebody goes off to serve, it's not just them, it's their entire family. And so I think those are some of the lessons of achieving better healthcare for everyone.
Now let's get into policy. You are the chairman of the board of Policy Vets. Please, let's dive into what is Policy Vets, what's the mission, the objective, and where do you hope it goes?
Well, Policy Vets is a new organization. It was really designed because of my own experience that, you know, as you said, I served as secretary, and then one day President Trump tweeted me out. I was fired by tweet. And so you go from running the second largest federal agency to the next day not having any role at all. And all of that knowledge that you have simply in our current system evaporates because there's not a planned transition when one person leaves government suddenly to the next. And I felt that our veterans deserved better than that. I felt that I had found a formula for fixing the VA. I felt that I knew what needed to be worked upon. I felt that that all the hard work that I had worked on was going to go and dissipate. And I will say the new secretary who took over for me, Secretary Wilkie, never once picked up the phone. And frankly, that's not, in my mind, what a good leader does. A good leader learns from people who have served before them, and they help people who come in their place. And that transition is a responsibility to our veterans. And that was a failure, I think, on the secretary's part. Secretary McDonough has reached out to past secretaries. I reached out to all past secretaries. And so not having a place in which to be able to share the knowledge was a real problem for me because I had committed I was going to serve our veterans. So one thing I did was I wrote a book. It's called It Shouldn't Be This Hard to Serve Your Country. And it's all about what we had done in the VA, what I was trying to accomplish, and set out a formula for future leaders of the VA in which they can follow it. Second thing I did was I joined veterans organizations. I'm the chairman of the board of the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. I am on the board of Veterans Moving Forward. I'm on the board of other veteran organizations that are serving. And then finally, I wanted a place for people like me who had served before, other secretaries, undersecretaries, people who had served in Congress in veteran leadership positions, to be able to contribute their knowledge. And that's what Policy Vets is. It's an organization now of close to 100 former leaders, many who have been Senate confirmed like myself, who have served and care deeply about veterans, but don't necessarily have a mechanism to give back that knowledge and to share. And that's what Policy Vets does. It works on important contemporary issues from people that have a knowledge and experience in having actually run these organizations before.
Wow, that's awesome. It is Men's Health Month. It's June. And you're a doctor. I'm a male. I mean, you know, for men watching, what are some of the tricks, tips that you've learned for us to elongate our life, even for non-veterans? You know, what are some of the things that are prevalent amongst men's health that we should be on the lookout for? What would you prescribe, Dr. Shulkin?
Yeah, look, men are funny people. Obviously, you don't want to generalize, but when you look at us across the board, we tend to often keep problems inward. We tend to focus on things that aren't always focused on ourselves. And so people ignore some of the things that are symptoms of illness or symptoms that something's not right and don't go and ask for help. And women generally are better at initiating those types of healthcare experiences. So I would encourage all the men that they should be getting regular preventative care. And obviously during a pandemic, many people had to forego that. Now's the time to think about getting your prostate screening, thinking about getting your colonoscopies, thinking about you know, making sure that you know what your cholesterol is, and making sure that you're really taking care of yourself by eating right and doing the proper amount of aerobic exercise. So I think that we certainly want to make sure that people take this month to think about, is this a good time to spend a few minutes thinking about themselves and the people that they care about? Secondly, I think what we learned, particularly in the pandemic, was the importance of taking care of your mental health. So many people with this forced isolation became depressed, anxious. That's not without its significant consequences. We're seeing higher rates of substance abuse, alcoholism, suicide attempts, and we certainly want to make sure that people are getting the proper help that they need should they need that. So I think looking out for those types of things are really important.
Thank you for tuning into the Finer Life Show. Listen, if you want to find us on the web, please check us out at www.mbfikings2017.org. That is www.mbfikings2017.org.